morning, everyone. We'll get started here in a second. I asked Mike to say a prayer for us before we get started with the lesson, so if you can, Mike.
Our holy God, our Father in heaven, we humble ourselves before you to acknowledge you and to lift up your name and to profess our love for you and our desire to walk with you and to know you. And we thank you for your divine patience and your mercy. Thank you for another day of life. We do ask for forgiveness, that you would please help us to rise above our inadequacy and our failure. And we thank you for making it possible for us to be forgiven through Jesus. And we praise him for his sacrifice and his devotion and his holiness and righteousness and his love. And we do ask you to please remember us through his blood and forgive us. We thank you for the special relationship we have with one another because of you and for this time we have together as your people to study your word and to learn the lessons that you preserved within it for us. And we ask you to please help us to leave here better than we came. Please be with Kelly and guide him and give him the presence of mind he desires to teach your word. Thank you for all that you do for us. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Team's number real quick. I'm going to get started. All right, well, just in case you didn't know, there are three teachers in this class. So, John, Mike, and myself. My name is Kelly. I'm Kelly Holt. I think I know almost everyone in here, but just in case you don't, welcome to Lesson 3. So, we're going to be going into Lesson 3 today on a portrait of Peter. And we're going to see if the clicker works. Okay, so hopefully everyone's gone through our lesson and read through it and read through the verses that were there. So let's just start at the beginning and do a quick overview of where we've been so far. So far, we've had a good study and we've looked at things through the eyes of Peter and how Peter is experiencing this new thing, Jesus Christ, that's in his life. So Peter meets Jesus near the Jordan. That was our first lesson. Second lesson, we talked about how Jesus was called to be fisher of men. But that was a great study about how Jesus really, I think he knew who Peter was, and he saw what he could do and what he had passions for, and he was able to mold him, and he was able to draw him in to hopefully, we'll see all the things he gets to do, but he drew him from being a fisherman to being a disciple and apostle. We'll get into that today. So in today and Wednesday's lesson, Peter becomes part of the 12 apostles. He will be among the privileged three, and we'll talk about that word privileged, which I thought was really interesting. Whoever came up with these classes, I thought it was interesting that they put that word. Jesus is commissioned among the 12, and then the only one. So if you'll see, whenever I do things on a PowerPoint, I try my best to kind of highlight some things here and there. If you'll notice, the numbers are all bigger than the rest. That's purposeful. So these numbers will be beneficial as we go through our study. This one right here, if you've done the lesson, you may or may not know what this is talking about. And we're going to get into that on Wednesday. So we'll remember that. He will be the only one. So let's go ahead and turn to Luke 6. We'll be going through 12 through 16. Is there anybody who'd like to volunteer to read that for us?
Now it came to pass in those days that he went out to the mountain to pray, and continued all night in prayer to God. And it was day, when it was day, he called his disciples to himself, and from those he chose 12, whom he also named apostles. Simon, whom he also named Peter, and Andrew his brother, James and John, Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon called the Zealot, Judas the son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who also became a traitor.
All right, thank you. So, Let's take one step back. God had a plan. Jesus was to fulfill that plan. Part of that plan was to select 12 apostles. And this is a big deal. Think about anytime you select anything in your life, is it a big deal? Even down to, think of the last time you guys played pin dodge, or kickball, or a softball game. Or, let's take it more serious, maybe in one of your classes, you're assigned to do a group project, and it counts for a grade. What do you do before you select those that are in your group? Let's take it on the non-serious side. Kickball, if you played with some of these kids before, or these guys before, you're like, I know he can knock it out of the park, and you're like, I don't know, like, that's not who I want to pick for my kickball team, because I want to what? Win. You want the best. You want to win, right? Okay, let's go to class. Whenever you're going to class and you've had group projects, you have those before, right? It's very important. What grade do you want? Always kid Abby, I'd say, we go for A's. We want A's, right? So if you're going to be in a project and you're going to want to win and you're going to want things to turn out positive, will you choose your partners, your group, wisely if you get a choice? Do you like it better whenever you are given the choice to pick who works in your group at school? Or the dreaded, you get assigned with these three people. Have you ever had that happen before? Has there been times where you've been assigned that and you go, oh, man, this is going to be tough. You ever had that happen?
Actually, I was one of the three that people dreaded.
You were the dreaded? Now, are you talking about the kickball or the class?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter? For both? Okay, awesome. good confession. That works. But hopefully you can see in our lives, even in something as simple as picking someone for a team, which we care about, right? But ultimately, what does that mean, whether we win or lose that game? Not much. It's fun. We can jab our friends for a day or two, but after that, we become jerks. If we bring it up too long. Remember back 7 years ago, we beat you? You know, you don't want to do that, right? You don't want to be that person. And that doesn't matter, but we really care about that. And then all the way to class, we really care about our grades, right? We really care about where we're going with our knowledge and what we're going to do in our careers and our lives, right? We really care about that. But even that, in the end, I mean, that matters, but there's other things that matter more, right? So as we look at this and selecting, you know, God had a plan. God's now not going to play kickball. God's now not going to get an A in a class. God has a plan of salvation for each one of us. And picking the apostles was part of that plan. It's a big deal. These are the foundation of who will be closest to Jesus. They'll tell others about salvation. And these are the ones that, right or wrong, we'll see, and we've read in the Bible, he will depend on the most. These are his closest group. So just like in that class, if you really want that A, you would want to pick the kids that you knew, or the guys and girls that you knew the most about that subject, or could help you get that A, right? This is what Jesus is doing, and this is God's plan to pick those people. So, as we read, what did Jesus do before he chose the 12?
Prayed.
I'm sorry?
Prayed.
Prayed, that's right. He prayed about it. Had he done this before? Had he gone and prayed about things before? Yes. Can anybody give me any examples at all?
Night after he was healing the people from the demons and sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's multiple places. There's lots of places. The only one that I wrote down in general was one we just had in our last lesson. So I thought that might be fresh in our minds from Mark 1, 35-39. It said he went to a desolate place. So he does this, and he's done this a lot. He gets, this is very helpful, and I assume this is part of his plan. So he went and prayed. So how long was he there, and why do you think he was there for this amount of time? all night. So what do you think all night would be in these times? I think Mike referenced it in one of his last lessons. So in this time, what would all night be from when to when? So the Jewish times, it was sundown to sunset. Sunset to sunrise. I said that backwards. Sunset to sunrise. So in some ways, this could possibly even be 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. Did I say that right, Mike, in general?
Right.
So it could possibly be that long. He was out there all night. So let's talk about this for a minute. You know, we talked about classes and class projects, right, just a minute ago. And we all study for tests and things like that. Has anyone in this room ever pulled an all-nighter? I'm seeing some nods, a couple shakes, majority of nods. Has anyone ever studied really late for a test? Now, why did you do that? Why did you study? And I'm not looking for confessions here. I'm looking for, you know, why did you study that long? Why did you try to fit that in?
Preparation.
You want to be prepared. You're wanting to take the time to make sure you had things about as good as you could get them, right? And the reason that you probably studied that long or that deep into the night was because that was your opportunity to, right? Because once you take that test the next day, right, you can't go back and study some more, right? My point with that is every test, you don't get a second chance. Now, there are some teachers that, you know, say everybody in class got 60, highest grade in class was 64, we're going to do this again. How rare does that happen? Almost never to get a retake, right? I've had teachers where they, you know, giving you bonus points. If you do this project, you can raise your grade. Or if you do this project at home, we'll add it to the test. But how often do you get a do-over? In general, you don't. And in life, because in life, it's the same way in general. We do get a do-over, if you will, through Christ from our sins. So let's not go in that direction with our thoughts. But that is true. But in general, in life, we don't get a do-over. So this was his chance to select, just like we talked about, to get the right people, to make sure that he was one with God and praying and making sure that the choices and the thoughts that he had were the correct ones in order to make sure that everything was going to go according to the plan. So in general, back to the thing, after an all-nighter, we've all agreed we've kind of studied really deep into the night. True or false? True? Okay. The next morning, how do you feel before the test? Whether it was all night, or I've studied until, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning. I've gotten like 3 hours of sleep, and then boom, got to drive to Western, can't find a parking place. You finally find a parking place, you run to class, and you take your test. Familiar? I think it is, because I see some smiles on people's faces. That's the way it works sometimes. So how did you feel after you studied all night?
Depends on the class.
How did you feel physically? Exhausted. Now, what did you do to remedy that? Can we agree? We were exhausted, right? You're exhausted and you have to do what? You have to perform. Your brain's got to fire all the protons, neutrons, all kinds of stuff. You just got to do all that stuff and spit out the information. So how did you feel physically? Exhausted? Anything else?
Once I'm done with it, I'm relieved.
Once you're done with it, you're relieved. But before, did you do anything to try to not be exhausted?
Coffee.
Good. I was like, I'm throwing a fastball down the middle of you guys. What did you do? You had some coffee, right? You did something. You drank some Dr. Pepper. You know, you did something to try to pep yourself up. Jumping jacks. I don't know. You have to do something, right? I want you to know that it's very biblical. Jesus didn't drink coffee. Because if he did, it would be right here for sure after an all-nighter, right? It's not in there anywhere. Did you feel sharp after you studied all night? Maybe, maybe not. My point in all that is, sometimes we've made choices for classes. We've made choices in our lives where we've tried to cram things into a period of time before it's time to actually perform, or it's actually time to turn something in. And sometimes we're not at our best at the end of that, true? We are not truly prepared for that in our physical way, true? And we may or may not have gotten all that information in our heads and ready to spit it out on a test, right? But we gave that effort. Jesus was human just like us. Don't think for a minute that he wasn't feeling something similar like you all have felt after an all-nighter, right? Which in my mind makes me even honor and praise him even that much more. That even after all that, even in this one situation, he was able to be focused and do exactly what God wanted him to do. Right? Didn't say he fumbled his words, does it? Didn't say he chose 14 by accident because he lost count. No. Sounds pretty distinctive to me, doesn't it? Here in a minute, when he read them off and he knew who he wanted. Now, obviously, I know when he prayed, you know, God was with him. And in the same way, I want us to maybe learn a side lesson. You know, we need to go up to God in prayer even more. No matter whether we're taking a test or we're playing a kickball game, whether we're teaching a class, we need to pray more. Because God can give you the focus that you need to be sharp to do whatever it is. Because whatever we're doing, we're part of His plan too. True? Look for opportunities to pray. After all this, Jesus was ready and focused to make this decision. So the 12 that are selected. So let's see. So in the verses, when I say what did he call them, I'm not asking for names. I'm asking for what term did he call them? Disciples, okay, now disciples is what they started as.
Apostles,
yeah, great. So you're both correct, but the one I was looking for is the second one, and we're gonna get into that here in just a minute. So he called them apostles. So who did he choose them from?
From his disciples.
Right. So it said, like in 13 it says, and when day came, he called his disciples, that's who he chose them from, and chose from them 12 whom he named apostles. So he chose them from disciples. There's not anything in the text necessarily, but I was thinking about this. How many did he have to choose from? How many people do you think that he was able to choose the 12?
14.
More than 12. Yeah, true. Yeah. This is one of the questions that I don't necessarily have an answer on my paper about. I just wanted to get your thoughts on, because it says, you know, he chose from his disciples. We'll get the definition of disciples then. I don't want to get ahead of myself. How many people do you think he actually chose from? Do you have any just any thoughts at all? Dozens, yeah.
Not exactly how many, but...
Yeah, like I said, it doesn't really say, but I'm just kind of... What do you think? Because in my mind, you know, in our minds, as we read these accounts, you know, images pop in your head of, you know, how it is or how it was or wasn't. You know, obviously driven by fact, but there's some ancillary things that float on the sides of your head when you think of these things. And I just wanted your thoughts on what you all thought.
There were probably many there, but there were only 14 choices. Because in Acts, when they have to choose a replacement for Judas, they ask who's been with them the entire time, who was present for all the miracles and whatnot, and they found two men who were impossible to be selected. So, the reason I said 14 was because think at that point there was only 14 choices of following that criteria. There could have been more than 14 people there, but there were only 14 choices to pick from.
Was yes. After or before he said that they have to carry their cross when they follow him?
This is well before.
Okay, so a lot of people, because a lot of people left him after that, I would say.
That's
maybe
very
not
good.
People who were there from the start, because he only had a few, but kind of filtering in as he goes through towns and things like that.
And great point. That's exactly where I was going to go after your comment, was I would agree for sure that, you know, there's only two more, like your point in Acts that you were talking about, that's totally correct. But you have a very fair point, which is kind of where my mind was going a little bit, is there were a lot of disciples. There were a lot, I don't want to get ahead of myself again, we'll talk about what a disciple is in a minute, and then I'll come back and I'll say, see that point when I want to say something, it was right then. But in general, there could have been a lot of people, because throughout Jesus' ministry, there were people that came in, that came out, that and could have even come back in again. You know, I'm not exactly sure about that. But the people, you know, came and went. So to your point, yes, I do believe there probably isn't, in the end, at that point, those were still with them. There probably was only a few. I mean, I'll say there was, because that's what the Bible says. It came out wrong. But I do believe, along your lines, that there were a lot of people. You know, that even in the stories we've seen so far, and we're going to see today, there are many people that were following him, that were trying to be a disciple or whatever. So, anyway, I just wanted your thoughts on that.
John 4 says he made more disciples than John. Jesus did.
And
he was, yeah, that's what it says. He made and baptized more disciples than John. That's a pretty big following.
That is, yeah, because John was a whirlwind. I mean, John was baptizing so many people that those of the synagogue came out and said, what's going on here? You know, like, if, for example, if and this isn't scriptural, so don't take it the wrong way, if we got a kiddie pool and blew it up, you know, over here, you know, the kind that's like $199, you know, that you see at like Sam's or something like that, the one that looks like a lot of fun, but you never would actually put it in your yard. You don't have a place for it, but it sure looks like a lot of fun. But if we put that there and we started baptizing people, how many people would we have to baptize in our back? Let's go ahead and change it. Let's move it to the front yard. There's a road that goes by. How many people would we have to be baptizing before people would be like, hello, yeah, WBKO, can you go out to that road? They're baptizing X amount of people. Can you go check on that? How many people would we have to? Quite a few, true. You know? Again, we're in a different time. Didn't have TV cameras, all that kind of fun stuff. But a lot was going on for them to take notice to want to be able to come out and check it out. Because it, my opinion, those guys were busy doing other things. They didn't have time for stuff like that so much. That's just my opinion. I'll just sprinkle that in there. I think it says a lot that they came out. But great point. So in general, I would think these weren't just, okay, who wants to be apostles? 12 people showed up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Peter, go get your brother. We got to have 12. Come on, we're going to get this thing started. I've been praying all night. You know, come on. No, that wasn't the case. He had lots of choices, and he prayed hard about it. And he and God were one on making these choices. And don't think for a minute that each choice was not purposeful. And how I'm going into this is, Peter was a purposeful choice in this. Yes.
And I know this class is about Peter, but also kind of talks about the idea of when you think of Judas who betrayed Christ. Judas wasn't always the bad guy. He didn't start out as like, oh, that's Judas, you know, he's going to do something. He started out as one of the 12 best of Jesus' disciples, who we've kind of already talked about, but there are many of. That Judas also was started with zeal and was wanting to do the work of the Lord, but then he fell from that. And I think that's oftentimes Judas kind of portrayed it like, oh, he started out as the bad guy and he just kind of happened to be an apostle. No, he was chosen as an apostle too. And so that's...
Yeah, it's a great point. I want you to remember everything you said. I'm going to get to slide 7. I'm just going to point to you and let it go. I mean, jump into that. Great point. Great point. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. So we talked about disciple. We talked about many disciples and how many disciples. And there's, he chose, you know, from among the disciples. So what is this new word? And it's new because it's, you know, ended here because he just chose them. What is apostle? What does this word mean?
One who is sent off.
One who is sent off. Okay. Anybody else?
My definition that I found was ambassador of the gospel.
Okay. Any other input? What I came up with was a perfect almost mixture of what you all have is, it means messenger, and he who is sent, which is almost spot on with what you have. And in general, if those two things are true, then everything you say would be true as well. It's kind of a mixing of words there, however that would be. So an apostle isn't I guess I'll go in this direction. In the world, a lot of people I'll go to my next question, then I'll jump into this. What's the difference between an apostle and a disciple?
A disciple would have been someone who's a follower. So maybe almost like a student of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And apostle implies that they now have a responsibility or an obligation to his work.
So like a teacher.
So what I started to get into, but I wanted to pull this up first is, and I'll get into it in some more things as well. For my study today, I went on this thing called the internet. You got to watch out whenever you do that for sure. But I was wanting to see what the world definition of what some different things were. And as far as a disciple is a person, when I looked it up, like I just Googled it, the first definition that comes up is this: a personal follower of Jesus during his life. I'm like, well, you know, I mean, you're pretty much there. And then it says, especially one of the 12 apostles. The second definition, which was less Jesus, if you will, a follower or student of a teacher, leader, or philosopher. So it's just along lines of what you said. So I think that speaks well in general that even the world recognizes, if you will, definition number one, that a disciple is a personal follower of Jesus, which I thought was interesting. So I read this phrase and I thought it pretty much defined it well. And I'll get to that in 1 second. So a disciple is someone who follows Jesus. Or a disciple is a follower or a student of a teacher. And an apostle is one who is actually going to go out and is sent out and has a job. Okay? So, I like this phrase. This phrase I found said, all apostles were disciples, but not all disciples were apostles. So does that make, can you see the difference between the two? And a lot of times, and I've been guilty of it myself, you know, use those words interchangeably, but they're really not the same. They can be the same, but they're really not. So, one thing I've learned from this is I need to be really careful which one I use, because I don't want to confuse a non-believer if I'm talking about, you know, disciple or apostle, because I could see how you get confused, because I wouldn't want to send the wrong message and them think that I'm saying something different over here. Well, he got it wrong here and there, so there's something.
Hey, Kelly?
Yes.
good thing to remember on this is Jesus only had, like you said, 14. You know, these 12, then Matthias, and then Paul, born out of due season. The Mormons believe that we have modern apostles. You still have to have 12 today. But even this shows Jesus only sent out these specific men. These are apostles of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Barnabas is referred to as an apostle in some translations, but not of Jesus. He was an apostle of the church, sent out by the church at Jerusalem. So we have to understand that this is how the New Testament uses this term. You know, one specifically sent by Jesus. You don't have those today. And you can look at Acts 1, the criteria, being with him during his ministry, witnessing his resurrection, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Can't have it today.
Yeah, you get the nail on the head, of Jesus.
Of Jesus.
You know,
right.
Part.
Yeah, exactly.
And even to your point, I think that's what I'm trying to say too, is that different sprinklings, if you will, and different denominations, you know, interchange the word in different ways. And we need to do our best to, A, understand it, and B, when we're communicating to someone else, you know, communicate it correctly so that we don't get lost in some of these other things whenever we're talking about it. Okay, so see if I go, yeah, I went too far. Okay, so whose name is on the list first?
Peter's.
Okay, and what does he call him?
Simon.
And he called him Peter. Okay, so as you maybe noticed so far, we haven't really gotten too far. We're only on slide 5 or something like that. You'll get to see some more pictures and things like that. So I alluded to it a minute ago. I went on the internet and tried to find some pictures and, you know, some interesting things, you know, to put on here along with our comments. You can see, you know, the picture there and even the picture on the page before. Mike and I were talking about it before. It's a brook, a waterfall, if you will. It's in Israel. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to do a search. I'm going to do a search for names that start with P, because what I thought it would do is maybe have a little fun and say, okay, who went first in the list that starts with P? Can you all guess it? And I thought I'd have like a fun little picture up there that had like, you know, Peter and question mark, or, you know, something like that, you know. So I searched pictures of names starting with P. So the first thing I got with was, does your name start with P? 10 facts. Just want you to know, I didn't click on it. I have no idea what 10 facts are about if your name starts with P. But that really just didn't go well. And then I got, have you ever gone on a search for something, or searching for class, or searching, and next thing you know, you're like 10 minutes later, and you're looking at this thing, and you're deep into it, and you're like, wait a minute, what was I looking for first? Because it just branches into stuff. This is kind of where I got confession. So the next picture I found that just really blew my mind, I'm like, people whose names start with P have to buy you pizza. I'm like, okay, well, that sounds like fun, you know? And just when you think that you found, it's gone like south as far as it can, then there was this one. According to psychology, girls whose names start with P and S will have triplets in the future. And I'm like, this is so far away from what I'm searching for. I just wanted a picture that had a P and a question mark or something like that. So two things I learned here. One is really, really strange, is Simon Peter has a P and an S. But we're not going to go there on that. The second thing is, be careful what you search for, because you'll end up wasting time. And I wasted a little time on this, so I thought I'd at least show you the fun pictures. At least so it's not wasted if we get like a chuckle in 60 seconds in class about it. So I didn't come up with a fun picture. So those were my three little fun pictures instead. Notice no picture. I couldn't find anything that went with it. So whose name is listed first, and what extra information is given about them? So we said it was Peter, and what extra information is given about him?
His other name.
What's that?
His other name.
His other name, okay. And what else? There's one little tidbit that's right behind it.
Who he named?
Andrew is his brother.
Andrew is his brother. So it's so Peter, and he had his name changed, and he named his brother, which is, you know, something we can kind of look at there for a little bit.
Matthew 10.
So let's, oh yeah, here's our question number two. So is it listed the same in other Gospels? You know, are the Gospels saying the same thing? Or do we have different stories? You know, did he, in this version, did he just randomly stick up the 12 in any order? What, how is it in other versions? Can anybody?
The first and the last are the same, but there is a little bit of interchangeability between the rest. For example, James and John sometimes come after Peter, whereas here Andrew is next. And then the last, Simon the Zealot and Judas, the son of James, who sometimes gets translated as Thaddeus, is also switched around.
And even in Mark's account, Andrew was in a different place.
Mm-hmm. Are you in the Mark one?
I can.
Okay. We've got, if you can look up Mark 3, I think it's 15 through 19. And can somebody else look up Matthew 10, 1 through 4? And we'll just read the two, and we'll just confirm for ourselves, right? So if you want to go ahead, I think it's Mark 3. I hope I wrote this down right.
16 through 19.
Yeah, I think I wrote 13, but it might be.
Oh, yeah.
You can see.
You want me to read the whole?
Yeah, if you don't mind. Oh, yeah. Hey, go ahead.
And he went up on the mountain and called to him those he himself wanted, and they came to him. Then he appointed 12 that they might be with him and that he might send them out to preach, and to have power to heal sickness and to cast out demons. Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, James the son of Zebedee, and John the brother of James, to whom he gave the name Barocanus, that is, son of thunder. Andrew, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanite, and Judas Iscariot, who also betrayed him. And they went into the house.
Cool. And you got the other one?
Mm-hmm. And when he had called his 12 disciples to him, he gave them power over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal all kinds of sickness and all kinds of disease. Now the names of the 12 apostles are these. First, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, the son of Alphaeus, and Levius, whose surname was Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanite, and Judas Iscariot, who also betrayed him.
All right, good. So to your point, you're exactly right. You know, the first and the last are definitely the same. So this is a question that I don't necessarily know, but I'll ask your thoughts. Do you think they're, what do you think about Peter's name being first? What does that mean?
I would think that they would all remember the first person that he would call. Thinking about when you hear a group of names, you hear the first one, and I usually remember the first one more than all the ones kind of in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Do you think because it was the first, there was any different importance to it? Do you think there was a reason behind it, I guess? You know, same question, but a little different.
I think it's kind of foreshadowing what Jesus told him. Peter, upon this rock, I will build my church. So he's first because, based on his confession, he built his church.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why.
Good. Good thoughts.
You look at the role Peter plays later on in the church, who's the one that gives a sermon that is recorded in Acts 2? Peter. Who's the one that, after Christ was resurrected and he brings back, Christ tells Peter personally, you have work to do. I think Peter plays definitely more of a leading role out of some of the other 12. Because you don't really see, I'm sure Matthew, with how cool the name he has, with the other important things as well,
yeah.
But there's not as many stories about Matthew's role as an apostle as there was Peter's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. There's a lot, you know, of what Peter's, you know, role is. And then there's some, you know, apostles that we don't really, I mean, don't correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a couple of them I don't,
yeah.
I I can't tell you two sentences about him. I mean, well, you know what I mean when I say that. Like, I just can't. And that's not to diminish them in any way, shape, or form. We just don't know anything. And so, in general, what I hear is you all are of the opinion that Peter was put first because he was to have a prominent role in building the church, and there's some symbolism, if you will, by him being named first. Is that a fair way to say that? Do you have something, John?
Yeah. I think it's a lot of that, in my opinion, because the Gospels would have all been written after a lot of this has happened. So it could be that Jesus called them out in that order, but I think there's a reason they each put Judas last. I don't know that Judas would have been the last one called every time. And I don't know that Simon would have been the first one called every time. But I think it speaks to their role in the church and everything that happened. I think it would have been, to me it would have been strange if Judas had been first and Peter had been last. Because I'm just going to keep talking.
So. Sure, yeah, go for it. So in general, we think that it was purposeful. Is that where we're going? Is purposeful? Which, if it is purposeful, then it backs up everything we talked about at the beginning. It's all part of whose plan? God's plan. And so it's foreshadowing, if you will, you know, that he would be first. So that's purposeful. So here's where we were talking just a little bit ago. So I'm going to go ahead and let you answer, because you answered before. So tell us who is last.
Judas.
So it says Judas, and we're going to try to finish this thought. Is it close at 9:45? Is that when the bell rings? Okay, I'm going to try to rapid fire this next 3 minutes. If it rings, just let me go for maybe 30 extra seconds, and we'll get it going. Judas was last. So what does it say about Judas?
He betrayed Christ.
Betrayed Christ. Said he was a traitor. And then the other one said he betrayed him, I think, right? Because we read through. So he's a traitor. So let's work off the one sentence here. Who became a traitor? I know it's a class about Peter, but I think it's real important to hit this. In this sentence, which word gets the most notoriety? Traitor. I'm here today to tell you that there is another word that should be equally notorious.
Iscariot?
Became.
Became. He wasn't always a traitor. He became a traitor, which speaks to exactly what you so eloquently said earlier. Judas was held in high regard, high esteem, ready to do everything that Jesus and God wanted him to do. He was chosen among the 12. We talked before, there could have been hundreds, maybe even thousands of people to choose from. He was one of the ones that God chose worthy to hold that position. Here's what I want us to think about. He wasn't always a traitor. He was with God. But hear me, we have a became in each of us. We each have a became. We're writing that story right now. I'll make this about me, but insert your name. For all time, do you want the sentence for your name to be, Kelly became a complacent Christian? Or Kelly became a zealous